Hi, I'm Ben Smith. I'm a reporter for Politico.com. I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm doing this Blogging Heads with Michael Goldfarb. Introduce himself over there.
How you doing? Mike Goldfarb, returning to Blogging Heads. I am online editor at the Weekly Standard, and recently was a McCain staffer, and now I'm back to the leisurely life of journalism.
So the thing that Mike's been writing lately that kind of caught my eye was about it was how much he loves Barack Obama and thinks he was working for the wrong guy in the election. to overstate it a little bit.
But, yeah, look, I think you know this has been a topic of frequent conversation. As conservatives seem to be fairly pleased, Republicans fairly pleased with the picks that Obama has made for. Particularly his national security team. Obviously, the domestic policy stuff is further to the left than anything we're particularly comfortable with. But also, is much different than the composition of his foreign policy team, which really does have a genuinely, I think you'd have to say, center-right feel to it. So that's been something that's been a source of some pleasure for Republicans and some relief, people who are really nervous at the onset that Barack Obama might actually bring change to Washington.
Somebody, I think Ross Douthat maybe, or maybe it was you, but I think it was him, wrote that he thought that Barack Obama is more likely to bomb Iran than John McCain would have been. Do you think that's true?
I've thought a lot about that. I think it was Ross who wrote that. I always thought that Hillary was the most likely to follow
that
through.
But she did sort of openly threaten to on the trail.
Yeah, she threatened to obliterate Iran, and you always had this sort of vibe from her that, you know, she was going to be like Margaret Thatcher and that she was going to come in and really throw somebody against the wall just to prove that she had what it takes to be president. I'm not sure if I believe that's true of Obama, but I do think it was pretty unlikely that McCain ever would have done that. So it could Obama be more likely to do it? It wouldn't take a lot to move in that direction. I do think, and I've talked to some Democrats, people who've been in previous administrations who feel like Barack Obama did learn the lessons of the Clinton administration with these sort of pinprick attacks. Million-dollar missiles against $20 tents type thing, and that he actually will sort of step in and use military force early on in his administration to sort of set the tone.
There's another theory that we've talked about a little, on IM that in fact, you know, Obama's picking conservatives so that they can give him the cover he needs to go left. So, and particularly, I guess, in Israel and Palestine, you know, only Hillary will be able to force the Israelis to the table. Do you see any? I mean, what do you make of that argument? Do you see anything to that?
I thought that was really amusing. I think there's a lot of wishful thinking going on both sides. I think some of the conservative, the positive conservative reaction to Obama's picks is probably a little bit of wishful thinking. And I think this is where you see the wishful thinking on the left, because, you know, look, There are really two ways of looking at the Middle East right now, and one is that if you solve Israel-Palestine, then the other problems get easier, and the other is if you solve Iran, then Israel-Palestine and all the others get easier. And most of the people that Obama's brought into the cabinet believe that, you know, Israel-Palestine is the first thing that you have to deal with. But that said, I think these people do. They are peace process people. You know, they are going to engage in the peace process. And so is the Bush administration the last couple of years.
Sorry, did you mean to say that they think Iran is the thing? That they think you should do Iran first?
No, the opposite. The opposite.
Yeah, okay.
They believe, I think Gates, I think Jones, I think Clinton, these are people who believe that much of the Middle East problems stems from the Israel-Palestine conflict, right. And that is what needs to be solved first. That said, I don't see how they get from point A to point B. Even if Obama did want to go in and force the Israelis to some kind of compromise, and even if the purpose of bringing Emmanuel in to some extent and Clinton and all these people was to give him the cover to do that, look, in 2 months, in 3 months, you know, you're probably going to have a Netanyahu government in Israel. And look, Bibi's given away more land. given more land back to the Palestinians than any other prime minister. But at the same time, the idea that somehow Obama's going to be able to force his hand and negotiate with who? I mean, look, the problems are the same. It's just different people. Look, if these things were easily done, it's not, you know, Bush was incompetent at times, but it's not that he was so staggeringly incompetent that he, you know, there was a solution staring him in the face he couldn't stumble across. It's going to take more than Obama's hope and change to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I don't understand what these people and will cover to do what? What to do what? You know?
Right. I think the argument is that you know the Israelis need somebody they trust who can push them to concede land. But I think we and particularly you could probably talk about this all day. And I wanted to grill you on a couple other kind of former McCain aide points before you know I let you turn back into a journalist. But one of them, do you think the McCain transition would have gone this well? I mean, were you guys this ready? Had you somehow pulled it out?
Look,
November 5th.
The transition was not something we talked about often. I think frankly there was this was not something that occupied our time to the extent that it did the Obama team, simply because we weren't delusional. We knew that it was going to take something close to a miracle for us to pull this thing out, whereas the Obama people had to be sort of ready to move forward on this because they were the likely winners. I was not privy to what was going on in the transition, but just from seeing what else was going on in the campaign, I have a hard time believing that the transition would have been certainly at this clip. But then again, nobody's ever done a transition at this clip. Your friend Mike Allen there, you know, he noted that the earliest anyone had ever rolled out a Secretary of State in the past was, you know, like December 18th or December 10th or something. And the entire Obama cabinet practically leaked in the middle of November, in late November, so nobody had ever seen anything
like that. All these slavering bloggers need to be fed, you know?
That's true. The cycle's changed. But no, I look, the transition's been very impressive so far. A McCain campaign needed to make a worse case for Obama. But, it turned, and Obama gave you enough material to work with for a worst case and a best case. He always talked about Jim Jones and Scowcroft and people like this as people he listened to on foreign policy. But, you know, he had other associates, and the question was, which would he go with? And it turns out he's turned out to be, not the Obama we feared, at least so far.
All right. One other campaign question, because I mentioned to somebody that we were doing this, and they said, I think something's a misperception about your famous moment of dead air on CNN, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
where they asked you said there are other people Obama's associated with, who've, I think said was anti-American or anti-Semitic stuff, and then like. And your interviewer said who, and it just like hung in the air for a moment. And I think there were some people were saying that it was because you couldn't think of anyone.
No, I mean, I think when you're in the bunker, sometimes you forget how things will play outside. And the problem with this was, I blame the press, but obviously your job as a spokesman is to get across a point very clearly. And this was something cathartic. This was more cathartic for the campaign than actually productive, I suppose. It was obviously Jeremiah Wright. I am shocked that any supporter of Obama's could really believe that he's not, tolerated sort of anti-Semitic and anti-American statements from Jeremiah Wright
just basically
over the last
like
20 years.
There was a rule against your mentioning it, essentially, right?
But we were prevented from mentioning it, and that was very frustrating to a lot of people on the campaign. So on the one hand, you wanted to honor John McCain's intentions. On the other hand, you wanted to, everybody wanted to go in that direction besides John McCain, I think. And this was a moment, I mean, the people in the campaign got a real kick out of it, but and frankly, it had some of the effect that I'd hoped for. I mean, the next afternoon on CNN, we got 3 hours of Jeremiah Wright coverage, and that was not a bad thing. It's not that I couldn't think of anyone. Uh, I I think that was pretty clear there for people who follow it closely and knew about this prohibition on us.
It was clear to me. So I guess we should probably move forward into the...
It's time to move on and welcome our new overlords so let's talk about Senate seats. Well, let's start with Blago first. I have a question for you. Has Blago done anything that's obviously illegal?
You know, it's funny that you mention that, because it strikes me that some of the stuff that is incredibly crude and vile on the tapes is just a caricature of what is incredibly normal, right? Like, you raise some money for me, you know, I'm not going to give you this post unless you raise some money for me. To say it like that, Fitzgerald is pretty convincing, is actually against the law to take an inducement to give a seat. But it's usually unspoken in politics that, you know, you're going to help me out, I'm going to help you out. And so, so a lot of what Blagojevich did in the negotiations around Obama's Senate seat, which was the most scandalous part, seems to me, you know, had he not been quite that crude about it, could have made the case this was politics as usual, probably will make the case in court this is politics as usual. Some of the stuff about, I mean, if you're, on the other hand, refusing to release funds for a hospital or refusing to sign a bill until you get a check is a much more traditional crime.
So,
right.
So, I mean, I was talking to a very smart Republican today who said to me that he was pro-Blago, that he said, you know, this is like, you know, how do we think that Obama is going to hand out his ambassadorships? You know, will they not go to the people who raise the most money for him? That this is actually pretty conventional stuff. And why should, you know, I mean, he's just more vulgar than, you know, what do we think David Patterson's doing right now? He probably isn't doing this so crudely, but I mean, is there a different calculus going on in New York?
I mean, I don't think it's about cash. I mean, Blago, because of this ethics rule that had passed, was in this race to collect as much, you know, cash and dollar figures and sums that he wanted. But, I mean, there is horse trading and influence peddling, and I totally agree with you that there's this gray area at which one end is Blago, which the other end is stuff that almost any politician has done. But what I was saying before, I think it's the government stuff that's much more obviously criminal. It's the demanding that the Chicago Tribune fire people if they're going to get a bond act. Like, that's, again, I mean, you know, there, I suppose, you know, you could say politicians tend to be nicer to their friends, and what's wrong with that? But that's when you're using kind of government power with private money or intersecting in a way that seems like pretty obviously criminal. But the most scandalous stuff in the Fitzgerald press conference did strike me as kind of the least criminal.
Now, you wrote today that Obama was basically neutral on Blagojevich. Yes, he backed him in 2006, and Obama is a party man, but somebody who sat out the fights against him, but also did not really actively support his agenda or his you know, his candidacy. So I wonder, I mean, what do we draw from this as far as, look, it was a trope during the campaign that Obama always put his political ambition ahead of, you know, anything else. That was the criticism. And in this case, does that seem to be true here?
Well, not ahead of anything else, but ahead of political reform in Illinois, sure. I mean, I think, like, you know, this was a situation where the alternative, because the machine is so strong, the forces of reform are so weak, the alternative was to go to war, you know, and basically make a career, like, as some have, of fighting the machine. And, you know, he didn't do that.
Well, it just strikes me, I watched this video today with John Judas. I don't know if you saw this, the new TNR TV function.
You watch everything, man.
And he was talking about how, look, Obama's not going to bring change to Washington in foreign policy. You know, that he's basically going to continue Bush administration foreign policy. This is a good thing. You look at what he did in Washington, in Chicago. He certainly didn't bring change to Chicago or Illinois,
you know,
politics. You think he did?
I mean, I think it's complicated. He didn't bring change, but he also kind of was change. Like, you know, because for although he didn't, you know, reform although he didn't reform the system, he also wasn't really of the system. I mean, he was Switzerland. He was
that's like when they say Joe Biden is he works in Washington, but he's not of Washington. he's of Delaware.
I mean, Obama, I think he's of Washington. He's not of Chicago. So, I mean,
it just strikes me.
I think you've got a good point. Like, I think there are. I mean, I think reform was a big polled very well this year. Obama hit reform very hard as a campaign message. He'd done some of it in the state Senate, but he's not Russ Feingold. It's not his central cause. I mean, I think, like, if you look at his career, like, you know, I mean, I think he cares a lot about domestic policy, right? I mean, I think, like, if he passes a $1 trillion stimulus package and spends it on, you know, on kind of green jobs and infrastructure, you know, Michael Tomasky was making the argument the other day that in itself will be the most liberal thing any president has done in half a century, and so, like, stop quibbling on the margins.
So, that may be true. It just doesn't strike me as particularly risky. Spending $1 trillion on infrastructure, look, who's going to fight him on that? I mean, you know, conservatives don't really have the stomach for a fight on something like that. And so I guess my question is, where are we going to see Obama engage in risky behavior? He wouldn't risk himself for reform in Illinois, fine. I mean, would he have been successful? I doubt it, no matter how much he put himself
on the line.
Well,
I mean, it may not be risky, but it's dramatic. I mean, if he's like created or inherited the conditions in which he can do this massive domestic spending thing. I mean, and I think people, like, because it's just a matter of the difference between 100 million and 500 million, a trillion, like, at some point, you don't, like, it scales up in a way that doesn't feel that different. But I just think, like, the sheer scale of that stimulus package is so massive that it just in itself, I mean, it's risky to be, I guess, as a policy move. You know, some people think it would be a disaster, and, you know, and in particular expand the deficit just to a frightening degree. But I think on the politics of it, I mean, it may be a situation where you can get away with that, but there have not been a lot of those in the past, I wouldn't think.
I guess my question, though, is do we think, I mean, what are the big risks that you see an Obama administration taking?
That's a good question. I don't have an obvious answer. I mean, I think the public diplomacy with the Muslim world, I mean, he's already getting sort of, there are elements of the right that are kind of hammering at him on that, although obviously, like, you know, done right, nobody objects to, you know, making Muslims around the world hate us less. So, I mean, I think a lot will depend on kind of the execution of that and what he says. But, I mean, there's a potential for him to do that in a risky way, but I don't know.
Because,
I think he's an incredibly cautious, I mean, I think one of the lessons of this year is he's a very cautious guy.
Yes, absolutely. And so this is, I think, my sense is that this is the consolation for conservatives. What I think was sort of a liability during the campaign, which was that he was not a risk taker in his political career, something that you could point to and say, look, what's this guy ever done? When's he ever risked mm-hmm. anything? And maybe that certainly from a conservative point of view is an asset as a candidate. You know, what do we have to
say that he's kind of temperamentally?
I'm not terribly afraid.
After all those Fred Davis ads.
After all
maybe,
that, I'm like,
maybe
I'm,
you haven't
I'm
watched
sort of,
that
I'm
new
like,
one that they released after the end of the campaign. You know, about Jeremiah Wright.
Yeah, I know.
Then you'd be more afraid.
I think
you're right.
It was pretty good.
I think,
ad,
like,
I don't know.
I'm a skeptic. but I think he's. I mean, maybe he's a little kind of temperamentally conservative, and it's something because he's like his identity feels so radical and new. I mean, you know, he doesn't have the same narrative as any other American president ever. He doesn't sort of fit into an easy category. You know, with his story that's been told a million times, it's a different story. But I think temperamentally, as a person, he's very conservative. He's very rooted. I think he's very skeptical of the capacity of government to radically change human nature. I mean, and so, I think there's a lot. There seems to be a lot for conservatives to take comfort in. Although maybe that's just the traditional honeymoon period, and something that will come out of the blue for conservatives to freak out about soon enough.
We'll find something, Well, let's. I just want to, since you are the New York political scene expert, like, can we dig into the New York Senate seat for a minute here?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. Partly it's great because Patterson is not like a predictable guy. He was not supposed to be in this job. Elliot Spitzer picked him as lieutenant governor in part because he wasn't part of the Harlem machine. He came from Harlem, but he kind of alienated some of those guys. he wasn't their choice. They had chosen somebody else. In fact, when Patterson was chosen, Patterson's own father opposed his pick for a few days. I mean, so Patterson, and he sort of came out of nowhere. He doesn't owe anybody for the job that he has, except Elliot Spitzer, which is why I was floating the Spitzer for Senate appointment. That seems to have been stillborn.
No, I think that would be extremely entertaining.
It would be amazing. But so, and the other, and Patterson, like, he's just going to make up his mind. You know, he's going to. I mean, and it will partly be about what's best for Patterson, but that, again, isn't an obvious calculation. I mean, I think if you kind of, like, did the math in New York State, what might make the most sense was a very prominent and well-regarded Hispanic female politician from Buffalo. But, like, that person doesn't exist. So he's both trying to check a bunch of boxes, trying not to come across as too political. I think he might like to – he likes firsts. And I think, you know, a first Hispanic senator is probably appealing to him.
Do you think this Caroline Kennedy stuff's for real?
You know, these things have kind of come in waves. I think this one I think that the Caroline Kennedy wave has sort of crested. Because there's, the appeal of her name, and she's very well liked. She's said to be a really nice person. I know somebody ran into her on the subway not long ago. I mean, she's a real person, apparently, by all accounts.
I read the Ruth Marcus column. I know she had a pony as a kid or something.
She has a tattoo. We like that. but she's not somebody who's really shown much ambition or drive, which is fine. I mean, you know, in her career, but it's like the question is, you know, can Patterson say the fact that her name is Kennedy has nothing to do with why I'm appointing her? It's her record on X. It's her belief in Y, and it's kind of hard to figure out what that would be.
I guess that's why, you know, on the one hand, I'm appalled by, you know, the liberals who've spent the last 8 years, complaining about nepotism, would sort of jump on board this. But at the same time, the Caroline Kennedy pick, to me, it seems like, you know, this could be between this and Blago the replacement of Dingell with Waxman. You're starting to see, not Obama, I would say, you know, there's no real evidence yet of any overreach from Obama, but from the rest of the party, that would be like a sure sign of sort of, you know, they can't control themselves.
It would be good for you. I mean, for Patterson, it would sort of be balancing the sense that, you know, I mean, I think he basically wants to anger as few people, a few of his fellow Democrats as possible. He has a potentially really tough re-election in 2010 against Rudy Giuliani or someone. So, I mean, the question is, will appointing Caroline Kennedy be a way to avoid pissing off all the other Democrats because she's, like, such a sort of transcendent figure that everybody will just say, the way they did about Hillary Clinton in 2000, well, you know, we were passed over, but, you know, it's kind of her right. Or will it piss off everyone because they'll say, we've been serving our time, we've been, you know, working for this, and she hasn't. And, I mean, you know, Hillary did build a record. Had nobody questioned her drive. She, you know, when she parachuted into New York, she had come with, you know, even before she was first lady, you know, as we heard a lot about, she'd worked. She'd had various jobs. She'd been involved in public life. Caroline Kennedy has kind of come in and out, but she is a New Yorker, but she hasn't. She's not a prominent figure. I mean, I don't know where. Sure. Education is, in theory, the issue that she's been involved in, but I can't tell you what her position was on any of the really major education battles of the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, this is the kind of thing that could really galvanize. There's so few Republicans left that by default, sort of scandal is going to come from the Democrats now. Because
they're in charge, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't any Republicans left. The Caroline Kennedy thing just strikes me as one of those things that could really, Republicans are sort of riding high off these little victories they've had with Chambliss and in Louisiana against Jefferson.
Yeah, are you riding high? This seems like preposterous to me.
Oh, I agree with you. It's nuts. These are all, except for the Jefferson one, which is a majority-minority district, and I am impressed that those people, the people in that district, didn't vote Democrat just out of habit. But for the most part, I agree with you. I mean, these are totally to paint this as some kind of.
You got a horse in the, you know, Mike Duncan was painting this as sort of part of the resurgence that he's leading in his campaign for RNC chairman. Do you have a dog in that fight? Who do you like for RNC chairman? Because it doesn't.
I did a piece on this the other day. Speaking for myself, I would say I think the man for the job is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has expressed absolutely no interest in wanting to do the job. The party has expressed no interest in being willing to elect him to that job.
You don't have a Howard Dean, though. There's not somebody who's a little bit bigger than the other guys in the race who can come in and sort of say clearly that he stands for something.
No, and that's what I think Romney could bring to it, and we need a turnaround expert here, and we need somebody who's going to really have an eye on organization, who can do press, who can do fundraising. Those are the three keys to it, and it's not clear to me that any of the people in the race currently are competent to do all three. Duncan can raise money, and he can do the management side of things, but he's not an effective surrogate for the party on the Sunday shows, for example. I would love to see Romney get into it, but that's just a fantasy of my own.
I gotta go pick up my kids. I will leave you fantasizing about Mitt Romney.
Ben, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, good talking to you.
All right, buddy.